This, of course, is Boston's own Aerosmith. And this is Aerosmith's lead guitarist, Joe Perry. On stage, Perry is known for his guitar solos, backup vocals, and creative use of the six-string bass. Offstage, he was at one point known as half of the Toxic Twins, a reference to his days of hard partying and heavy drug use with lead singer and songwriting partner Steven Tyler. And Tyler were known for their squabbles over everything from songwriting to women to some ugly displays of ego. But 44 years after their band was born in an apartment in Alston, they're still touring and writing music together. Joe Perry chronicles it all in a new memoir titled Rocks, My Life in and Out of Aerosmith. We recently spoke with Perry and began by asking about his decision to name his book after the 1976 Aerosmith album Rocks, which included hits like Back in the Saddle.
I think of that record as being one of those times when we were at a creative time. Creativity, it's an interesting thing in art where you go through ebbs and flows, and I think that we were hitting on all cylinders. We were coming into our own as recording artists as well as songwriters, and all the experience we'd had up till then working in front of crowds, I think it all came into play at that point.
That's interesting because you're making me realize that, of course, creativity does ebb and flow. And in the case of a band, maybe one member of the band has creativity really surging at a moment when another doesn't. So it's a quite interesting sort of synthesis of some people who are kind of on fire, some who maybe don't feel as much at a certain moment.
Well, I think that that's one of the advantages of being in a band, and it works on a lot of different levels. When you're on stage and not everybody is feeling it that day, you know the other guy's going to pick up, you know, and be there for you.
Over the time the band has been together, have you come up with techniques for when you feel like there's a lull in creativity to kind of jumpstart it?
Yeah, I remember having a talk with Rick Rubin about it. Out of the blue, we were talking about creativity, and he said, listen, you know, if you're feeling like you've written it all, so to speak, go back and think about some of the records that turned you on when you first got into rock and roll. Make yourself a cassette and just listen to it, you know, over the course of a week or two.
Did you ever do that? Did you actually make a cassette for yourself?
Oh, yeah. I still do it. I still, now I put a playlist together.
So if you needed to rev up your creativity right now, what would be three songs you would definitely put on that playlist?
Well, I'd probably put on Crossroads by Robert Johnson. I'd put on I'm Bad Like Jesse James by John Lee Hooker, and I'm a Man by Muddy Waters.
I'm a man. Yeah. I'm a full-grown man.
Joe, something else you write about is your Boston roots. You grew up in Hopedale, and then Aerosmith famously lived at 1325 Comm Ave in an apartment just down the street. Where here we are at BUR. And Boston, you know, still, I think, considers you and your band one of its greatest claims to musical fame. How would you describe Boston as shaping you and the band, and does Boston still have a place in your heart?
One of the things that was really attractive about Boston in the fall, as you know, there's how many 100,000 kids, freshmen come in every year. So there's this whole influx of energy. And that, I think, really plays a big part in the personality of the town. And when we went in there and we were, you know, the same age as all these freshmen moving in, and only thing was we were going in to learn a different art. We were going to the School of Rock and Roll.
Joe Perry, you write in your book, in reference to having once lived at this apartment at 1325 Comm Ave, that, quote, there were times when life at 1325 looked like a TV comedy. So rather than have you describe what it looked like, is there an Aerosmith song that you think really captures the Aerosmith of 1325 Comm Ave?
I think that, no surprise, I think the lyrics to that really address the attitude that we had. I I mean, we had to have a certain amount of confidence about what we were doing and some vision about what we were going to accomplish.
Joe, in 1997, Aerosmith released a co-written autobiography, which is named after this classic by your band. So, of course, that's Walk This Way from the 1975 album Toys in the Attic. Was there something you felt was left unsaid in that autobiography that has now led three of you, I mean, also Steven Tyler and Joey Kramer, to write memoirs of your own?
Oh, God, a lot was going on during that period of time when we were working on the book. I mean, we were kind of excited about it because we were able to tell some of the stories and finally get some of the fun things in there, and everybody going around the room talking about their perspective of these stories. And a lot of the things were kind of subtly left out, but we were so wrapped up in also working on an album at the same time. And here we were sitting with this book that was kind of lopsided, and it was really too late at that point to rewrite it.
So does this feel like, does your memoir now feel like a kind of a setting of the record straight?
Yeah, and that some things have been blown out of proportion. Some things have been left by the side of the road that I wanted to bring to light.
In your book, you do tackle some heavy-duty things. You talk about drugs and alcohol and struggles with those, problems with your first marriage, fights with Steven Tyler. I mean, I think you've said in an interview, look, I love the guy like my brother, but it doesn't mean I have to like him. How would you describe your relationship with him today?
That's pretty close.
That still holds?
Yeah, we've kind of learned to accept each other for who we are. I mean, I still can't figure them out, you know, but that's been the way it's been since the beginning. I've given up trying, but that's what also makes the songwriting part of our relationship, gives it the dynamic and it gives it the edge that it wouldn't have if we, like, sat there and agreed on everything. I mean, we saw that in each other when we first met and started to play together. I saw things in him that I didn't have, and he saw things in me that he didn't have. And I think that still holds true. It isn't a personal thing. We recognize it for what it is. It's a difference in our way of looking at the art.
Joe, you left the band in 1979 for about 5 years to work on your own music, and then you released an album in 1980 with the Joe Perry Project called Let the Music Do the Talking. And here's the title track from that album. Aerosmith later did a version of that song, and let's hear a bit of that version as well. What'd you think of that second take on it? Do you feel like they made it better? Did they do it justice?
I kind of prefer the first version myself.
Oh, do you?
It just felt like more of an expression of what I felt it should be. It basically speaks to my overall philosophy of what I do. I'll let the music do the talking. I mean, I'm not a great public speaker, but I can always say, well, I let the music do the talking. So.
Is it ever hard to listen to Steven Tyler sing your songs?
Oh, no. I think he does a great job with it. I think it was really hard for him to sing the lyrics that I wrote. It's more of an ego thing, I think, than actually, like, improving on the lyrics. But, you know, that's part of the deal, I guess.
You know, anybody who works for a living and has to work with other people, which is most of us, knows what it's like to have to get along with colleagues you're not crazy about. But in your case, I don't think anybody watching you guys on stage would have picked up on the internal turmoil. So how were you able to get on the stage together and make everything look pretty good without letting behind-the-scenes frustrations spill over into the public performance?
What holds the band together to this very moment is the excitement that we feel when we get on stage and we start playing a riff that we've played 1,000 times before. But for that night, it's the first time. So there's a feeling there that has never left. We get on stage and the adrenaline starts to flow, and we hear the excitement from the audience, and that's what does it. Talk about things that nobody cares. Wearing out things that nobody cares.
Joe Perry, near the end of your book, you raise a pretty interesting question, and it's basically a question to yourself. You say, what would your 20-year-old self think of you today? What is the answer to that question?
I'll tell you. Well, the closest I can come to answering that is when we did that event, the mayor, God rest his soul, had been wanting to put a plaque on 1325 for a number of years. And finally, with the 40th anniversary of the band coming up, it felt like a good time. I really wanted to play there on the stoop, right there where we used to sit and drink beer. You know, we figured out a way to do it. They stopped the trains for, 15 or 20 minutes and blocked traffic, because I think about 40,000 people showed up. And I stood there with my guitar in my hand, looking out at all these people, fans that had followed us from the start, and I turned around and looked up at the window. It felt like it was yesterday that I was up in that room with the dream of, wow, we got a band, maybe we can make a living at it. Let's see where it goes. Dream on, dream on, dream on, bring the dream, dream come true.
Joe Perry is the lead guitarist and one of the founding members of the band Aerosmith. His new memoir is called Rocks, My Life in and Out of Aerosmith. Joe, thank you so much for talking with us.
Great talking to you.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.